Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The Food Revolution Papers, a chance to look at how politics affects what's on our dinner plate. We are experiencing some technical difficulties getting our guests online. So while we rectify those problems, I'd like to play a piece of music for you. In the light of recent news about the North Sea oil spill, I want to play a piece by a gentleman by the name of Jamie Michaels. He actually wrote this about the oil spill in the Gulf region. It's called Black River. I do hope you enjoy it, and hopefully we can get our technical problems solved very quickly.
My father's grandfather made his way down to the sea. He sailed halfway around the world from the shores of Italy. With nothing but a face and how his life would be. He lived in a time when dreams were to be believed. My father's grandfather labored each and every day. Not till the sun kissed the horizon would he put his nets away. Heading for the home they'd built in this new land. Following the stars to the shores of Louisiana. Cast your prayers upon the water when the moonless nights have come. Your home lies far beyond the shadows where the Black River runs. My father's grandfather taught his son all that he knew. Take only what you need. Take pride in what you do. So every day becomes a link in what's an everlasting chain. It passes father unto son and unto son again. Cast your prayers upon the water when the moonless nights have come. Your home lies far beyond the shadows where the Black River runs. Father's grandfather wouldn't recognize this place. I stand here on his shore, tears running down my face. I've got this feeling in my heart between forgiveness children take my trembling hand, the tides keep rolling in. Cast your prayers upon the water when the moonless nights have come. Your home lies far beyond the shadows where the black river runs. Cast your prayers upon the water when the moonless nights have come. Your home lies far beyond the shadows where the black river runs. Your home lies far beyond the shadows where the black river runs.
Great song, and my heart really does go out to the people in the Gulf, and also the people that are going to be suffering from the disaster that's unfolding in the North Sea. We're still having some technical issues, so what I'd like to do is just replay a segment that we recorded a couple of weeks ago. You might still enjoy it, though. I have a question. You know, we've talked a little bit about stuff in general, but what's been bugging me is recalls. I think the last time a recall hit the TV involved some Japanese car. There was some minor issue with the brakes, but what would I know? However, recalls aren't limited to cars. For some reason, the news seems to avoid them like an out-of-control Toyota when it comes to the food world. Ashley, do you have any recalls for us this week?
Oh, Simon, do we have recalls for you this week. On Thursday, the July 28th, there was a beef bound for processing, which might have been contaminated with E. coli. Now, the might is what was interesting. It's E. coli 0157H7 in Tri-State Beef of Cincinnati, Ohio. It was approximately 228,596 pounds of beef products after routine testing by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. It's a news release acknowledging the beef was distributed to facilities where it was to be cooked, which would have killed the E. coli pathogen. And so because the product was shipped into commerce, they're subject to recall, and even though they were shipped to other federally inspected establishments, they will receive full lethal treatment and would no longer be considered adulterated. So they had to pull off all of this beef, and it was 228,596 pounds of beef recalled. That's a lot. And it had been distributed in Iowa, Virginia, Chicago, Cincinnati, Columbus, Ohio. But it seems to me that I don't understand this part, Manny, where they're talking about if it hadn't gone out to commerce, they didn't have to pull it. Does that mean that if this E. coli-filled beef hadn't gone out to commerce? What do they mean by that?
Well, okay, and let me ask a really dumb question. That equates to a million quarter pounders in my book. Am I correct?
You know what? I don't have a calculator in front of me, but I'll trust you with that.
Well, it has
my brain immediately goes to, where's the ammonia? All they need, I guess they didn't get to squirt it with the ammonia quick enough before they hit the recall list.
Well, I think Ashley sometimes struggles with these numbers. In nursing, you don't have to deal with numbers as much as we do. But, yeah, it's a million hamburgers, a million quarter-pounder hamburgers that basically are contaminated. You know, one of the things they try to do, as we discussed, is they try to give the industry a break and give them an opportunity to sell this meat before it's recalled. Now, I mean, that sounds kind of strange, doesn't it? And one of the reasons is, as Dr. Tickey points out, they literally cannot pinpoint where this illness came from, how much of it's there, and what the true status is, because they have so few controls over the inspections of beef, they just really have to blanket everything. So part of that may not be subject, may not be really that dangerous, but who knows what part it is. So we're basically playing Russian roulette with the population.
You know, I just suddenly had this flash. The inspector, he's going, cow, 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 chicken. Oh, that's not supposed to be in this line. You know, cow, 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 pig. Oops.
Well, for me, Simon, one of the things I go to that's very funny, one of the things I keep going to is that how much of this hamburger has been allowed into our daily routine filled with the E. coli, and because that was my question, Manny. So therefore, it's cooked. And if you're going to cook it, it goes out, it goes to whoever, they're going to cook it, therefore don't worry about it. So when does the inspection then suddenly become, I mean, this is a heck of a lot, as you said, that's a lot of burgers.
Well, look, if you want to stop a problem, you have to want to stop a problem. And the fact is that the FDA and the USD protect the manufacturers. So most of the people in those departments, as we point out, are political appointees. So if their former company, JBS Meats, who they may have worked for before they got a job with the FDA, is at risk, you think they're going to rush to report their former employer, who they wish would be their future employer, when they leave the department again? It's not like they're there for life. They're there to accomplish goals of the former employer and then move on. And where do they all move on? Right back into business.
It's the golden...
Go ahead, Simon.
Well, I do believe that we have the infamous Manny Barling on the line.
Yeah, we had lost our phones for a couple minutes this morning, so I'm a little bit behind today. But we're safely on.
That's good. Fear not. I mean, I played some music, and then I thought I'd bring everyone up to speed with some ground beef stuff.
Oh, that was always fun. I really wanted to start something that is important to everybody in the Atlanta area that we all really need to know about. Did you know the so-called Burger King bandit was caught in Atlanta? He'd robbed 20 Burger Kings in five areas, and apparently he was shot. And they're trying to identify the guy, and they found his mask in a booth. So it's safe to go back to Burger King, Simon.
That's good. Normally we're joined by your wife, Ashley Brooks, but as I understand it, she can't make the program today.
No, Ashley's teaching today. She tried to readjust it, but the class would not give up the day, so she's shown up, and so she's doing some teaching. What she does is she teaches nurses health and how to improve interviewing patients to understand, particularly the elderly, what their nutrition needs are, whether their drugs are correct, and try to help everybody improve the quality of medicine for a variety of different nursing home health care companies in Los Angeles. So it's always an adventure. And shockingly, would you believe when the nurses sit there, they go, I never heard that before. And if she teaches a class that goes past lunch, they all say things to her like, well, let's go to McDonald's together or Burger King. So here they are listening to, worrying about the health of their patients, getting a better quality food, and they all want to go to Burger King.
Actually, what amazed me was that Ashley trusts us two together. I mean, the potential for trouble is high. And in fact, it's rumored that they may adjust the doomsday clock as a result of this program.
It may be true. And what makes you think she trusts us? She'll probably listen to the show and make sure that we haven't said anything we're getting in trouble with. But I got to raise one of Ashley's pet ones. The last thing she said to me going out the door was that autism study. And it's a little off our normal political thing, but it relates to what we've been talking about, all these fraudulent tests and studies and tests that are done primarily for money and for grants and all these other things that go on. And so there was a report that came out about children with autistic siblings face a greater risk. And this whole report, which is supposedly printed in Pediatrics, which I haven't been able to find, and I intend to read it very carefully, as does Ashley, and so we can report on it again. And what they're saying is that if parents have a child with some of a form of autism, there's a 19% chance the next child will have autism too. But it's a preliminary report. So the issue is, why do you issue a preliminary report on a test that's ongoing? And the reason, in my opinion, is always because there's grant money at stake. And for those people who have been watching any of this discussion on autism, and I'm not sure you have either, Simon, is there's a big move going on, and I think Christy Brinkley is one of the heads of it, that talk about the environmental causes of autism, including ascribing risk to vaccines and vaccinations of young children. She claims her child is autistic because of the vaccinations that were given to him. And so the argument has become whether autism is genetic or whether it's environmental. So, of course, the big drug companies and everybody are pressing the genetic issue in funding tests, because if it's environmental and it's caused by vaccines, food like GMOs, et cetera, then we got some liability and problems, don't we?
Well, of course, but, you know, let's assume for a moment that it is genetic. In my mind, that means that our DNA is going all to hell in a handbasket, because autism rates have increased so dramatically over the last, let's say, 20 years.
So the question is, what is damage to the genes? But I want to go to the study for a minute and that aspect, and we can get into the more serious aspects of it. But, you know, they're talking about saying, well, we think it's genes, we think it's a genetic thing. And yet when you read it, this is a quote from one of the researchers. Quote, to a limited extent, scientists can already predict risk from DNA. To a limited extent? Well, I have a 1 in 100 chance of winning a horse race and picking the race. I got a 1 in a million chance of winning the lottery. So when a doctor or scientist says, well, to a limited extent, you might get cancer or you might get autism, this isn't a field where they talk about, you know, proof and providing statistics and tests and blind tests. And here's a guy speculating on what I consider the most, limited statistics. And so why would they do that, Simon, other than for money, right?
Oh, there can be no other reason.
Oh, but, yeah.
When I read... I haven't read the actual report. All I've read is the, report on the report, or the summary on the report of the summary. You get the general drift.
Right. I mean, it's just kind of like, this is like the story about where the first person says, I saw three soldiers, and it gets five levels down, and it's now 100,000 of them armed with nuclear weapons. That's sort of how the industry works.
Yeah, but, you know, the little bit of information I have been able to glean from it is, well, we might be onto something, so you'd better just keep funding us.
That's exactly the point. And so our listeners don't think we're being unduly critical. Let me give you the factors that bother me. It said infants on an average were 8 months old when their parents enrolled them in the study, before the signs of autism are apparent. At age 3, each child was evaluated. Okay, so they're talking about it's a genetic problem, but it doesn't show up. So what goes on? First of all, you got a mother who's eating probably GMO foods, fast foods, drinking Coke and all the other stuff. So the child's now 8 months old. Does anyone consider they're feeding them baby food with MSG and about 11 other different ingredients? So now he gets to an age where... We had a talk with a guy who delivers our water at Arrowhead. He was talking about how he took his 5-year-old daughter to McDonald's because she loves chicken McNuggets and she's been eating them since she was a year old and loves them. I looked at the guy like, are you crazy? Why don't you just take him to a, take her, your daughter to a cyanide stand and order a cyanide shake or something? So for all we know, these children are all in one. And, of course, they're testing the older siblings, the younger siblings. So they're both eating the same foods. If they're next to a chemical plant or they live next to a factory farm, for all we know, they only tested 644 children. So they might all be in Iowa and Nebraska next to factory farms, right?
Right.
So no one knows what the environmental impact is. So among the boys, 26% were found to have some form of autism. Someone defined some form of autism. Was it 1%, 5%, 10%, some at 10, some at 20? And who made a decision it was some form of autism from a test on a three-year-old? So, and the girls were 9%. Well, I question those statistics. I question how they're derived because, frankly, I've got a few children, so do you, and you can't tell partial symptoms at that early age. So what are they going to say? They only read a certain number of letters of the flashcards of your alphabet?
I mean, none of these numbers make a lick of sense if you take a step back. But they're very Moorish. If you just go, this is interesting.
Yeah, but the whole problem, and then they test and say, well, having an older sibling with autism means you have a 1 in 3 chance of a similar diagnosis. Well, that's not very logical, even among 600 children, again, because they have the same environmental factors, right? And the great quote was from this professor, a child psychiatrist. And by the way, I question why child psychiatrists are autism experts in terms of genetics, okay? So this guy is a professor. Let's call him by name, Fred Volkmer. He's an autism and child psychiatrist at Yale University. Better than Harvard, where they created a false test to give drugs, Dr. Biederman did, to make sure that children were given drugs by the time they're 4 years old. He says, quote, I've seen families with 5 kids with autism. My first question is, do they live next to the Love Canal? You know? Remember the Love Canal in Buffalo that was so polluted?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So where do these kids live? What are the environmental factors? What are the, family histories? In every one of these tests, they don't say the basic thing. Are they the first members and the first generation of their family to have autism? So if they go back 100 years, not one member of their family's had autism before, and they're telling me it's genetic, then I want to ask what damaged the genes of that child and why this generation has damaged genes and they're now subject to autism, right?
Absolutely. I can almost hear the answer, the official answer. Well, autism wasn't recognized as a real issue, 40, 50 years ago. It was a rarity. But, with modern science, we're now able to, more closely pinpoint autism. Although I've yet to actually read a sensible paper on what these, degrees of autism are.
That, I agree with you. But more than that, their assertions are so wild. Like they say up to 15% of autism cases have been linked to specific genetic mutations. Okay, 15% of autism. How many cases is that? How many links do they have? Who determined their links? What is the specific link? And coming back to what you said, I didn't see autism cases when I was growing up. I don't think I heard the word till I was well into college. And they were like so rare, they were like someone being struck by lightning. And then somewhere in the 70s it heated up. I had two lady friends who I grew up with, one and another lady in Michigan, who became special ed teachers. And they specialized in autism. And all of them were in an advantaged area. One of them was in Bloomfield Hills, a very Tony Pricey suburb of Detroit, where a lot of the automaker executives lived. And she had a class of autistic, that consisted of autistic children. First time I'd ever heard of it. But out of the entire school system, she had 15 autistic children out of the entire area, okay? And that's so small a number. And in each case of autism I've seen, they don't come from poor families. For some reason, it was in those days, it was from more advantaged families, which I've never really understood either. So there's so many issues involved with it that are unexplained. So what do? They come out with a survey to justify that and to some way offset and do something about what's going on with the lawsuits and the clash that they have. And by the way, do you know what the fight is over the vaccines? Have you heard what it is?
No, I haven't.
Well, when I was a kid, my children had, what, two or three vaccines. I remember as a child having, I believe, just smallpox and polio. And the polio came in, I probably was, oh, I don't know, 8, 9 years old when the polio vaccine came in. So, you know, right now, would you believe that children get approximately 36 vaccines before they're, I would say, 3 years old? So, so you're bombing these poor children with as many as 30-some drug things, most of which are untested, most of which are just real experimentation on children, and you wonder why they're getting sick. I personally would not allow my child to have that number of them. It's ridiculous.
Oh, absolutely. But I want to go back to something that you said. Well, I mean, I'm not ascribing it to you.
Oh, you can blame me.
No, you used those magic two words, up to. So up to 15% is, you know, it could be.
Yeah.
And I, as soon as you said that, my mind flashed to a commercial that I've seen run on TV here in Mississippi. It's all to do with one of these alternative healthcare plans, you know, part of Obamacare, I guess. And the line is, save up to thousands of dollars. I mean, you're not telling me anything. You know, what does up to anything mean? You know, does it mean that, you know, we could do a study and 15 people out of 100 are autistic, or and we can do another study and none out of 100 are autistic? What does up to mean?
Oh, yeah, it is so nonspecific, but the numbers are so small. First of all, no one has ever clearly identified in any article I've read the number of children who have autism in this country. So what number are we talking about? So are we talking about 5,000, 1,000 children in the United States with autism? Are we talking about more? How much money is being spent on these tests, and what are these grants? And, of course, who's sponsoring the grants? Because ultimately, you know, the company sponsoring the grant is going to have some drug that affects the genetic code of this child and is going to want to sell it, right?
Right. I mean, the only reason to sponsor a, quote, independent study is if you have a vested interest in the outcome.
And I don't believe it ever said independent study, by the way. I don't think they had the nerve to use those words. So for a moment, we're going to go to a parallel universe, and but we're not going to take that subway to Mars that we heard about once on the show, are we? So,
no.
So in our parallel universe, I saw an article in this morning's Times. It says, lawyer is taped offering a parent bribe. I couldn't stop laughing. Baxter International, the drug maker, okay, who, by the way, promotes itself as a champion of global anti-corruption and talks a really good game, got caught with one of their guys, their lawyers, and I, believe it was Mexico, another Latin American country, offering a $100,000 bribe in a lawsuit to make an opposing expert leave. They offered him 100,000 pesos and a ticket to Vegas to be missing on the day of the trial, okay, a $25 million dispute with their subsidiary in Mexico. So if they'll bribe a guy to disappear in the middle of a lawsuit, what would they do to a scientist to prepare a program or a report on autism or anything else? And it goes back to our story about how things are underwritten, paid for, manipulated in terms of testing. Well, they'll even go far as to buy your site out and to buy your own expert out so you got nobody at trial. So when I look at these tests, to me it's another walk down that road. How do you feel, Simon?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, as you were telling that story, my mind was off on the mob. I mean, you know, it sounded like classic mob trial.
Oh, that's where they learned it from, right?
Right.
The difference is the mob used gangsters. They find these, I mean, and they corrupt my profession. I'm a lawyer by trade who became a writer because of cancer and other things, as our listeners know. But I've watched corporate finance corrupt lawyers just beyond description. You know, it's the lifestyle, the children in college, the big law firms, the big check. And somewhere along the line, these guys start leaving their morality at the door. Well, you go to a country like Mexico, which is very poor, and how long do you have to search before you find a lawyer who's got financial troubles, troubles with the children, all these other things, and they offer him $25,000 to go off, make this offer to make a witness go away. Well, I'm sorry, you know, most people will really compromise their morality because that money in Mexico may be equivalent to $250,000 here. And I think you'll agree, Simon, that when you get into these small towns, small countries, and you offer big dollars to people who are, you know, really in need of money, they'll start selling their morals out pretty quick, won't they?
Oh, you don't even have to offer, quote, big dollars.
That's true. And we're going to segue with that to the other parallel universe, right? Oh, love these parallel universes that are really created by GMOs and these big corporations and big food. One of your favorite topics is the number of Indians that have died, these peasant farmers, over the last 15 years. Well, you and I have been trying to trace down some articles by a lady in India who writes about this constantly. And her articles are so painful to Monsanto and all the rest of them, they actually block her materials. And I think I had to ask you to take some steps to see whether you could get through and find it, because I couldn't. So one of the numbers I got out of her is roughly 200,000 farmers have committed suicide between 1993 and 2010, from the date that genetically modified foods were starting to test in India up until 2003. Well, I know more than 10,000 have died since 2003, so we're above 200,000 right now. I mean, that's mass murder. I mean, we have an American corporation, Monsanto, who has already been labeled as the worst criminal offender in the history of corporations, are responsible for more than 200,000 farmers die in India. Can you imagine if they killed over 200,000 farmers in America's heartland? Would be lynching Hugh Grant, the CEO, who I still wonder if he's been able to sleep since he's been CEO. Do you think he's been able to go to sleep at night carrying the burden of killing 200,000 people?
I'm going to share the thought that a caller had when we posed that question. Of course, because he doesn't care.
And that's probably very true. He probably every time he comes up, he goes, how many stock options do I have? How many stock options do I have? So at the end of the day, I mean, these people are, and I use the term scorched earth because that's a favorite term of lawyers or anyone who's read a lot of history, because that's what they do. They will burn, pillage, destroy everything around them to achieve their goal. And I remember as a younger man studying the Crusades. That, by the way, is a curse of going to Catholic schools, and probably the biggest mistake the Catholic Church does. Because if you go to a Catholic school and you study the Crusades, you actually read the books, and you find out what the Catholic Church did during that period, it's so unattractive, you're immediately thinking about being a Muslim. And I'm not, I would never become a Muslim. But that's how bad it is, because between Richard the Lionhearted, Richard I, leaving England and going to the Holy Land, particularly the Third Crusade, they cut a swatch about 10 miles wide that looked like the 101 freeway or the local freeway wherever you are. They burned, pillaged, raped, stole, took every animal, ate every bit of crop, and they basically ate and fed and stole their way all the way to the Crusades. And when they finally came home, they were no longer an army. So they came home, and they couldn't even cut a new swatch. So they had to go through the bad area that they already destroyed, and the local areas. I mean, that's one reason the Austrians imprisoned Richard I, Richard the Lionhearted, is because he just wreaked so much havoc on the way going down. That, and of course, the head of the Austrian government was one of his competitors to take over the Crusades, and they feuded like two children, kind of like MacArthur and everyone else in World War II and the Korean War. So at the end of the day, though, this is what American corporations are doing. They want to go to India to basically steal, cheat, perfect their products, experiment on the local thing. Okay, let's see if this whole village will die from GMO cotton. Well, no, but all the buffalo did. But along the road, from the day they landed in India to the provinces where they test this stuff, is a wide road of disaster and death.
Right. And you mentioned the Indian writer, and I'm doing my absolute best to pull up her name, which, of course, I can't find off the top of my head. But I will say this: the site that she writes for is www.dnaindia.com. It is not actually a site dedicated to anything to do with, you know, biotech per se. The DNA actually stands for Daily News and Analysis. Now, what is very curious about all of this is that for the past 3 or 4 days, I have patiently tried to get onto their homepage, and it just physically does not exist. I've tried it on my computer, actually my computers. I've had Jan try it on hers. I know that you've tried to get there, and we all get the same thing. You know, it's, this doesn't really exist. However, if you go to Google and look up DNAindia.com, there is a facility called Look at the Cache. That's kind of the last version that Google has. And guess what? I just pulled up the Google Cache. Last update, Thursday, August the 18th.
Wow.
So the site is there, but for some reason, we in the U.S. just don't seem to be able to access it.
Yeah, but that, again, is back to the dirty tricks that are done by Monsanto and other corporations. I would almost describe it as frequency jamming throughout the wars, you know, and other things that people have done to try and stop the enemy, so to speak, from, you know, publishing whatever it is. I mean, certainly Russia and everyone else tried to stop Radio Free Europe, if you recall, in your youth. They hated Radio Free Europe. I mean, we didn't have any Tokyo Roses, but we certainly created a lot of havoc for them. But in this
right.
case, Monsanto, I believe, has enough power to influence Google. Throughout my research, I would find these articles because I research every day. And then a week, what happens is, at first I wasn't copying them. I go back a week later, and I couldn't find the article anymore, so I learned to copy everything immediately the first time I saw it. The odds are I'm never going to see it again.
Oh,
so
yeah.
they will just do anything to do that. So, and let me give you an example why. I don't know if you saw the story about pesticide contamination constituting illegal trespass, but for the first time...
Oh, I loved it.
A Minnesota Court of Appeals ruled in favor of an organic farmer who sued a large GMO place who was spraying pesticides on the crops because it contaminated his fields. So even though it doesn't go to GMO contamination, it's a very meaningful case that probably is going to get appealed, and it's going to go on for a little while because the basic ground is whether there's a trespass. And if it's a trespass like the same as the person trespassing land, only this case it's chemicals, that basically GMO seeds could be next because, as we all know, Monsanto sues everybody who is has contaminated crops from the GMO seeds, which, by the way, are all sterile and not supposed to be able to do this. So it's like going around saying, I just got pregnant from my sterile boyfriend, right? You know, sure, it couldn't be very sterile, right? So,
I actually see this court case as being potentially very pivotal. Sure, right now we're just talking about pesticides, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if the pesticide involved was Roundup, but yeah, that's just a wild guess on my behalf.
Yeah, and I got to give a shout out to one of my former clients who died. It will be 14 years this October. He had one of my best clients had the nerve to get a heart attack on my wife's birthday and die on our anniversary before he came over for an anniversary party. And he won the first case against the United States on this issue in Indiana. He was he had a large farm. He did a lot of fur trapping. So they took the fur renderings from the cattle slaughterhouses and turned them into fur coats, everything else, and wholesaled them. Well, they built a Air Force base near there, and the thing was flying dangerously over his place. And of course, he had all the contamination from the airplane fuel. For those people who are young, if you saw an airplane, a jet plane fly, or a prop plane fly in the 50s and 60s, boy, they left a trail of smoke. Remember those days? Like, they looked like a bad bus going down the road.
Every time you saw one, you went, oh, my God, I think it's about to crash.
Oh, yeah. You admit that vapor trail for those type of jets were really like smoke, not white, right? And,
right.
It was just horrible. And by the way, something people don't know now is in those days, airplanes flew a lot faster. So they were like the old GTOs of the 60s who had no smog devices, were faster than they should have been, but ate enough gas. You know, my oldest brother came back from the Korean War and bought himself a 54 Cadillac with dual quads on it. Got about 4 miles a gallon. It was when he punched it, it sounded like a toilet in heat, and it just went through gas. Well, that's what the old airplanes were like. So there was just all this contamination. Well, he sued them and won the first case, went all to the Supreme Court, the first case where the government had to pay damages for this, and it led to some of these changes. Well, this to me is the first case where someone has sat down and said, you know, if you start spraying chemicals in the air and it contaminates people around you, you're responsible. And it reminds me of a story I hadn't thought about. One of my longtime clients' wives is from, not Tallahassee, but, general Tallahassee area there. And her father lived across the border in southern Alabama. And one of his best friends basically dusted crops. Well, he died at 35 from cancer from it, and all the members of his family died before they were 40. His children died in their 20s. And as a result, she has been a way of saying that, won't eat anything with pesticides, won't use them in her garden, and stays away from them because she saw firsthand how spraying this in the air killed people. Well, what makes anyone in this farm business see this as any different? If you're in Minnesota and you're dusting these things and you're, because I presume that these pesticides were done by dusting or some kind of spraying, which left a cloud on a windy day blowing in every direction. And there has to be consequences in our society. If you put something out there and it starts polluting your neighbor's farm, and by the way, nothing's been said about whether this family's life has been shortened by the same chemicals that have infected their organic farm, right?
Right. But like I said, I see this as a very pivotal case. If it does, you know, go all the way, then obviously the next step is going to be seeds, you know, that are airborne. I think probably the first is going to be alfalfa.
Well, the alfalfa is interesting. As you know, the USDA has been ordered, and the FDA, to conduct testing on alfalfa by the Ninth Circuit in San Francisco. And what happened was 2 days later, and it's also true, I believe, of the sugar beets, the FDA deregulated them, saying, well, gee, they're deregulated, so therefore we don't have any authority over them, which is not going to sit well with the court. They'll take it for what it is. But the real issue is the FDA is allowing all these corporations to conduct their own tests, which we all know is like putting the fox in charge of counting the hens in the hen house. And will a court accept a test made by Monsanto or by Monsanto's personal company that will show results that favor Monsanto? So if they strike it down and it goes to the Supreme Court and they have to start arguing whether business can test themselves and the public can rely on that test, not only is it going to be an important case, but it's going to expose this hypocrisy to the public more than we can on our shows. Right, Simon?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, fox guarding the hen house is such a good analogy. You know, you buy your results. In fact, the joke I like to make is, oh, okay, we're going to throw $1 million at the study. We'll give it to a, quote, independent research team at our favorite university, and we'll give them a bit of a helping hand. We'll just write the two-paragraph conclusion, and that they can fill in the rest of the 200-page report.
Sort of like the military or the police department investigating a riot of, or where they kill people and go, oh, our officers were just fine, you know? But that's always going to be the results, right? So
that's right.
So it turns out, which is fine, hysterically funny, is after all of this chest beating and bragging by Monsanto, et cetera, there's a little story out of Minnesota Public Radio. Rootworm could be resistant to GMO crops, okay? An insect that can fatally weaken the root system of corn crops is overcoming the main line of defense that farmers have against the pest, which poses a threat to $5 billion corn crop in Minnesota. Okay, so Roundup now isn't working against the weeds, and the weeds are eating them up, growing 20 feet tall, thinking they're Superman, so they're called super weeds now. So pretty soon these pests are surviving that, going, you know, bring it on, dude. Create your next one and we'll survive that. And I can see in 10 years the only people dying from Roundup will be humans, because bugs adjust and humans don't adjust. So have you ever seen anything quite like this? It's the ultimate in scientific stupidity to me.
Well, you know, in some ways, though, it's akin to our medical system. You go to the doctor, and the doctor says, oh, take two of these, you'll be fine. You come back and say, I took two of these, and this happened. And the doctor says, oh, well, take two of these as well.
Uh-huh.
And so it continues. You know, it's not fixing a problem. Well, it is fixing a problem, but, you know, it's
yeah,
compounding the problem.
Only if it's your ex-wife, okay? But seriously, for a moment, I want to explain for a moment how this works. When people talk about genetically modified crops, let's talk about corn. Monsanto takes a corn seed. They break the corn seed's gene pattern up to DNA by using a toxin, and I repeated toxin. It's called Bacillus therolytus or whatever it is, and I promise you I've mispronounced it. It's known as BT. So they split it up, and they put glyphosate in there. What is glyphosate? It's the active killer in Roundup. I mean, why don't they just put strychnine in? Why not? So then it creates a plant that has this glyphosate in every single bite of the plant. So along comes the root worm and go, oh, look at the yummy corn. He has a few bites. The glyphosate in what he eats gets in his stomach, rots out his stomach. His stomach explodes. He falls over and dies, okay? Well, this is from the Iowa State University, which, by the way, received $250,000 from Monsanto for a gene seeding chair. So you would think they would be really partial to Monsanto. But they had to admit that the rootworm is developing resistance to the GMO corn. It says it, normally the corn, which contains a protein, is deadly to the pest. Protein, it's not a protein. It's pesticide, glyphosate. It is a poison, not a protein. It says they've documented what they say is the first known example of rootworms able to survive the toxin. If so, then the GMO fruits are now worthless, Roundup is worthless in the field, and all this debate about Monsanto saving the world just flushed down the toilet, didn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, plants are really good at developing resistance, as indeed are humans. My wife hates cabbage, but I'll tell you what. If cabbage was the only food source available, eventually she'd break down and eat it.
I mean,
And this is, you know, it sounds like an incredibly silly analogy, but that's effectively what's going on. You know, the weeds are going, I don't like this toxin, but, oh, well, you know, if that's all we've got to eat, I guess we'll just have to learn to live with it.
So I'm going to give you the old grotesque sci-fi description before we get to your obvious references to Soylent Green here. You know, basically, imagine taking a human being saying, okay, I tell you, we're going to give you this corn. You're going to love the corn. It's got a little poison in it. Oh, I'm sorry, a protein, glyphosate. You eat it, and if you're attacked by a bear and he eats your arm, don't worry, that son of a bitch is going to die from eating your arm, but you're going to go around without an arm. That's what this stuff supposedly does, okay? So, and imagine that in cattle. So, yeah, it may kill the bear that eats the cattle that is eating the corn, but it'll also kill the human who eats the cattle who eats the corn, right? So, anyway, make a long story short, what this root worm does is it actually eats the root. So when the winds come along, there's no root holding, and the plants just blow over, you know. So you got 1,000 bugs sitting at the end of the cornfield when the wind blows going, timber, what the hell, the corn plants go over. But the fact remains, if this doesn't do it, and it's going to create a whole generation of bugs that lick up glyphosate and Roundup and go, bring it on, dude, then guess what? You can take all the theories between genetically modified foods and just get rid of them because they don't work anymore. And that's one of the things that they're going to have to overcome. Because not only are you going to battle the general public, but guess what? You got to battle Mother Nature. There was once a film made in the 70s called Phase 4. It's not generally not available. It's Phase and then Roman numeral 4. It's done by Academy Award-winning artist and title designer Saul Bass, who did the titles for such famous movies as It's a Mad, Mad World. And Saul did this wonderful film. Michael Murphy's the star. And it's about a project in the middle of the Arizona desert where they're studying ants. Well, the reason they're studying it was because it seems the colonies of ants are getting smarter and smarter. So it's four sections of this movie that show how the ants adjust to every pesticide, adjust to everything they do to try to kill the ants, who get smarter every time around until the end, when the ants take over the facility, consume a human being, and turn him into a member of the ant population. And it's really a story about science running amok and a prediction about exactly what we're talking about with bugs and superweeds and how nature adjusts to everything that you can do to it, takes your best shot and comes back and kicks your butt. So Monsanto, in its ultimate corporate arrogance, has defined God and nature, and they think they're going to win a battle with God and nature to destroy all of these bugs and change the face of the earth. And what they're going to do is destroy human beings, but the bugs are going to win. Why? Because they've kicked everybody's butts for the last couple million years. You can kill off dinosaurs, you can kill off races of humans, but you can't kill off bugs, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that really is annoying me is that these biotech companies are effectively patenting life. I mean this as a joke. I wish that, you know, 30-some-odd years ago when my first child was born, I'd rushed to the patent office and said, "Hey, I want a patent Paul."
Oh, great.
You know, I'm pretty certain they'd have said, "Get the hell out of here." But isn't that effectively what the Monsantos of the world are doing?
Absolutely.
You know, they're creating some Frankenstein creature. No offense to Paul.
Yeah. And by the way, this is a point we make all the time. It was a 5-4 Supreme Court decision made by Clarence Thomas, who at one time was general counsel for Monsanto. Didn't disqualify himself with self-interest and basically ruled in favor of his former client. So, and why does that shock that? Financial influence on the court or politics or, I mean, if a major corporation didn't try and bribe somebody, we wouldn't be in the world, would we? Back to our parallel universe, they're doing it in Mexico. And by the way, Monsanto's been fined for bribing officials in India, Pakistan, and other places, and were recently caught again in India lying and bribing officials to do genetically modified food tests in there. So what are you going to do? I mean, they just move on to the next country and bribe and cheat and steal and do whatever they want. And I always tell the story about Nigeria, where a certain drug company killed several hundred children experimenting with a vaccine and drug without permission of the government. So they put a warrant out for the rest of the CEO of this major top 10 U.S. corporation, who ultimately retired and can't travel anywhere around Africa for fear he's going to get arrested and charged, even though they bought their way out with something like $50 million or $100 million to pay for the loss of those children. Of course, the money never went to the families. We all know that, right?
Right. So, what concerns me, though, is that, you know, it is all about bribery and corruption. We've talked about, you know, the infamous Franken salmon aqua bounty, and you know, it was a pretty thinly veiled threat that they made. Okay, you know, we'll just take it somewhere else, and I'm sure that a little bit of money, you know, they can find themselves a country that would be happy to accept them, yeah, grease the palms, and they can grow their Franken salmon to their heart's content.
Uh-huh. And I'm going to add this to it. I agree. But what happens with all of this stuff, I mean, that's why Frankenstein went out into the forest to do what he did, is because he didn't have enough money to pay off governments to let him do it in public. And in the old days, people could get lost off the beaten track because there was no medium. As we've seen with iPhones, the Internet, and everything else, it's hard to hide the lies. For example, there's a big fight in the Philippines. Right now, more than 120,000 farmers are planting GMO corn in the Philippines. And right now, Monsanto and others are putting out all these public relations articles, and this one's by a scientist, that says that, oh, the planting of GM crops is good for the environment since it reduces the need for pesticide. Yeah? tell that to the rootworms, number one. And the truth is GMO products take 4 to 5 times the amount of pesticides than conventional crops do. So they don't get less pesticide, they get more pesticide. And at the same time, I'm seeing all these arguments. Monsanto's claiming that Somalia and other countries are barring them from bringing GMO corn, and if they printed, if they took this genetically modified corn and planted it in drought-ridden Somalia and all these other countries, how they have food now. Well, Simon, as you point out, genetically modified plants require more water than conventional plants, so they require more water. How can they protect someone in a drought if they need more water than conventional plants? It doesn't make sense, does it?
No, and that is a really interesting aspect. In fact, earlier this morning, I was poking around on Google, trying to find, quote, independent. That is just, it's an ugly word. It probably needs to be redefined in the dictionary. But I was looking for truly independent sources on that very subject of GMO crops and water requirements. And do you know what? It's really hard to find.
Of course.
They're buried. I mean, these companies spot a problem and they go, we need to fix Google. And what they do is they get a bunch of writers, hacks at $7 an hour.
Try whores. The word whore prostitutes a little better.
Yeah, we're not covered by the FCC, so
right.
we can say anything we want here.
And I don't want to mention those. Do you want to mention those whores either? Do you?
No. But you know, the fact is that, you know, if you generate enough articles that have the right keywords, you can bury anything that has any value. So it's incredibly difficult to come up with hard data on the water requirement. You know, everyone seems to be in agreement that it's true, but boy, it's hard to find independent research on it just because it's so buried.
Well, let me give you an example of that. I sent you a variety of pro-biotech articles. They've been flooding the market with them. And this is one of my favorite ones. This is a quote from a paid-for scientist from Monsanto. It says, on the whole, GM crops have significantly reduced carbon emissions and thus help mitigate climate change. In 2009, this reduction in carbon emissions by GM crops was estimated to be equivalent to removing 17.7 billion kilograms of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, or equal to removing 7.8 million cars from the road for 1 year. Well, who said that? Hugh Grant, the chairman of Monsanto? I've tried to find a study or a statistic that supports this. So when I read that, I called up a friend of mine in that area, the environmental protection area, who does consulting for the state of California in that area. I thought he was going to swallow the phone laughing. He said that was the dumbest, most absurd comment he had ever heard in his life. The genetically modified. He says, what did they do, stop running tractors? He said, it seems the bigger the farm, the bigger the tractor, the more the gas, and the more it burns. He said, and then he started talking about manure pools and methane gas. He went on for 5 minutes, and he was laughing the whole time through it, Simon.
Right, but I think I probably read the same article or maybe one that was very similar to it. And I think the argument that they were trying to use was because it uses less pesticides. It was about that time that I fell off my chair laughing as well.
I saw that one too, and I said, they didn't really say that. I mean, is that insult your intelligence? I mean...
Well, it certainly insults mine.
Oh, yeah. And then this great quote, I sent you an article about from this guy who was a scientist, a Dutch scientist in Africa, and he had this great quote, Africa missed out on the green revolution in the 60s, and now if it's not careful, it's going to miss out on the gene revolution in this century. What do you mean, gene revolution? This isn't a revolution. This is a greedy attack on the food that Americans and the world eat for the sole purpose of profits, because guess what? There's no proof. In fact, there's proof to the contrary, including studies by the University of Wisconsin, WHO, and all sorts of other people, the United Nations, that show that conventional crops grow more food than genetically modified crops. So, you know, all this propaganda from Uganda, from Monsanto, and by the way, it's more from Monsanto than DuPont, who basically makes the DuPont hybrid genetics, trying to convince everybody that, oh, yeah, bend over, this is good for you, you know? And worse than that, when you bend over, they take their wallet before they, you know, do whatever they're going to do. And that's what American business is doing. The motto of American businesses in the United States should be, bend over, America, here we come for your money.
That's right. Obama won't print anymore, so it's going to have to come out of your wallets.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure Obama is responsible for this. According to the birthers, that's why he's against genetically modified food, is because he was actually born in Nigeria and doesn't support it. So the birthers, by the way, have not died. They just drummed someone out of the military because he was a birther and he was showing up in Germany to a base going, Obama is a criminal and he's not a American citizen. And even the birth certificate in Hawaii is a forgery. And then he started rapping Muslims and everybody, and I'm sure included African Americans in the whole thing. So they decided perhaps this guy from Nebraska doesn't belong in the military. What astounded me is they gave him an honorable discharge. They should have painted a Ku Klux Klan sign on him and branded him like the A for adultery in the old days and sent him out there, right? The scarlet letter right now should be a big KKK on all these racists. You know, and why do I say that? Because these same people are the harbingers of messengers from these major corporations, because these guys, and I had lunch with a friend of mine who's a member of the Tea Party. I thought I'd gone to a mental institution to interview someone. And John, if you're listening, you got to take your medicine. He offered some of the worst excuses for going on. And I sent him one of these racist arguments that shows Obama looking like a monkey and blaming everything except nuclear war on Obama. And I said to him, so what do you think of this? And he said, well, everything they say in there is true. So we're in a country where we have a significant number of our population brainwashed by American corporations to destroy the EPA, the FDA, the USDA, all of these other things, and return control to our American corporations who are already controlling our country through illegal contributions. So anyway, that's enough of my rant on politics today.
Well, no, I'm going to wind you up just a little bit more. I don't suppose you caught the segment on CNN earlier this morning. Apparently, Christine O'Donnell was supposed to be interviewed by Piers Morgan.
Uh-huh.
She definitely lost her cool.
That was actually on last night, live. I saw a little bit of it live, and I wish I would have stuck around for more.
Oh, she ended up walking off. In fact, one of her, quote, people blocked the camera. It was priceless. You're not asking me the questions that I asked you to ask me. And his response was, And I'm paraphrasing here. Well, you're a bloody politician. I mean, I'll ask whatever I want.
and that's the whole point. Everybody in business and politics wants to structure everything so they look the way they want to look. Nobody is into the truth anymore. As I say all the time, Edward R. Murrow must be spinning faster than a top in his grave looking at all of these places sell out. So finally, some of the new people, and by the way, that's one of the things I like about Piers Morgan. I wasn't a fan of his at first, but he's certainly more aggressive than Larry King and the others. Larry King had become so soft, it started to become a high school reunion every time someone appeared on the show. And someone has to act more like Bill Maher, not totally Bill Maher, but less like Larry King and more like Bill Maher. Because right now, interviews are just too sweet in the industry.
Well, yeah, but, they have to balance the advertising dollar.
And they have to respond like Fox does to people like Murdoch. And as the story is growing in England, are you shocked to see that Murdoch lied? And there are actually memos and other things of record showing they knew. And I don't know if you saw this letter from the guy who took the blame, took the hit for Murdoch, that he took the hit because they promised him if he didn't tell the truth and go serve his prison term, they'd give him his job back. And now that he's basically out, they're saying F you, and you can't have your job back. So he's starting to release memos that show that Murdoch and the rest of them lied. Have you seen that yet?
I've caught bits and pieces of it. I mean, we're talking a serious unraveling of a very large organization.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and what unravels it all? The truth. Because before this is over, the truth is going to be out. Because the truth can only be suppressed for so long. And that's the mistake of all these people. They think for some reason they're invincible. Same way, I mean, this to me is Richard Nixon syndrome. Don't worry, guys, we can cover up. I am the president. And it didn't work because somewhere sooner or later you get someone brave, someone like Judge John Sirica, who would not tolerate the lies we told him in court and press the issue of Watergate when other people wouldn't. And someone out here is going to push this, and that's the way it goes.
I sincerely hope they do.
You watch. You know, and it's funny. Look at the tobacco industry. They got away with this for years until Jeffrey Wiegand turned over all their papers to CBS and others and proved that they've been lying and there were really 4,000 chemicals in cigarettes, 100 of which were carcinogenic. And now because of him, we see these awful-looking anti-smoking commercials and all these other things and to cut back on smoking. Well, it's just a matter of time. Right now, Monsanto's taking a position, see, 15 years, and there's no problem with GMOs. And I say to them, have you read the articles by the 500 concerned scientists who signed a petition against them? There's 16 major studies that show that it's in the gut and it causes problems with health. How about their own employee from Purdue, Colonel Huber, who sent a letter to the FDA early part of the year saying he couldn't wait for a study because the information was so important that GMO foods were causing illness by putting this dangerous bug into human beings. And Monsanto will get up tomorrow and go, oh, there's no proof, there's no nothing. Well, at the same time, there's no proof on their part it works either because they've never released a test. And the only test they were forced to release by the court in Germany showed their own test showed that it was deadly. It killed mice in, 2 weeks? The tests in India show it kills buffalo in 2 weeks, right?
Right. But right now, they have the political clout. Yeah, they've got everyone in their pocket.
They have everyone in the pocket except the American people.
Right.
And at this point, I got to plug our book. That's why we wrote the Food Revolution Papers, which will be out the middle of next month, to show how we've got to go back to the Boston Tea Party and dump genetically modified food in the harbor and say no more and boycott it, stop eating it, and force society to provide better quality food for ourselves and our children and our grandchildren. Or guess what? They're going to go back to a lifespan of 40 years. In fact, at the rate the cancer statistics go, In another 10 years, the average lifespan of Americans will drop by several years. You watch. Unfortunately, I may not be here to see it, but others will be. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening, think about what your children eat. Think about what's going on around you. Ask yourself, do you really, really want to have your children eat these kind of foods? And the answer is no. And the only way you can do anything about this is to essentially boycott with your paycheck and boycott with your checkbook. If you don't buy it and you won't eat it, they'll stop serving it. So far, we've been successful in getting people like Gatorade's removed high fructose corn syrup from their food. Starbucks has removed it. A variety of other people have removed it. And guess what? If people stand up and vote with their paycheck and complain and stand up for the health of their children, we can get rid of some of these products. Right, Simon?
Absolutely. And let's put in a quick plug for your website. It's www.howtoeliminatepain.com. How to eliminate pain is all one word. Well worth checking out, as are Manny's and Ashley's other books. They're all great, great books to read, full of important information. And I use a capital I for important.
Well, thank you for the compliment. There are over 91, I think there are, I should say over 90 articles on health that can be read for free, but buy our books. Hear the whole story. Look at how you can change your life, reduce illness in your family, look 10 years younger, and beat the system. Because guess what? The best way to not spend money on your health policy and the best way to reduce your medical costs are to eat different food. There's no better medicine. Yeah, you are what you eat, and believe me, genetically modified foods have proved it beyond your fondest fears, or I should say greatest fears. Go ahead, Simon.
I wanted to bring up a subject, but I think I'm going to save it for Saturday when Ashley is with us. I'm sure that the both of you will have a lot of fun with it, though.
I can't wait. Until Saturday, everybody, have a wonderful day.
Yep. This is Simon Barrett and Manny Barling. Wishing everyone a happy and safe and healthy day. And please join us on Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for our other program, Surviving the 21st Century. And we're going to be exploring yet more aspects of our modern world and how it relates to health. Till then, goodbye.